Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crowine Cottages here in Kilkenny and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery and we're live today Friday from 4 to 5 and the show is repeated every Monday from 4 to 5. Now while we're on the air we'd love to hear from you so please feel free to send us any questions or comments or suggestions that you might have. Easiest way while we're on air is to send us a text to 086 353 7782, or you can email us at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, lots to talk about on the show today, a very busy day in food news, and of course it's now that we're into spring, there's lots of things to be considering in the garden. But Mags, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
And you survived okay without me last week?
Yes,
we did. Thanks to Pat for filling
thanks
in for me.
Thanks very much to Pat for springing all sorts of questions on me at without any notice. He's a great man for that. The conversations could go from like starting at one point and it can go absolutely anywhere.
What's the scientific name for yeast again? What is that? Can you tell me?
But yeah, I know I always enjoy having a chat with Pat actually.
Good stuff. Well, thanks a million to Pat for filling in for me last week. And it's good to see that everything is still here where I left it.
Yes.
Not broken.
No, all fine.
So a busy food week?
No. No, my whole life is just controlled by puppies at the moment, to be honest. I can literally, I was down in the garden on, it was a nice day, Monday morning actually. So I had three dogs and the six puppies all helping.
Oh, that doesn't sound like it would be a lot of help.
It wasn't actually a lot of help and stuff, but they had a great time. And they're just like their father, actually. They like kind of branches and things.
Oh, right.
So I was cutting raspberries and they were pulling and picking and stuff.
Carrying them to where you want them to go? No,
generally in the other direction.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah,
but,
yeah. That's to be expected, I suppose.
They're so cute, actually. So they get away with it. But it's very hard to get work done, actually, with them because they're all running under your feet and they all want... It's amazing. They all want to be in the utility room in the house. Yeah. So, yeah, lots of running around and that. And then I had one sick puppy. So there was a bit of drama one day with her, but she's actually all better now.
And have they all got new homes to go to, these puppies? They must be about 8 weeks old now, are they?
Yeah, they're just over 8 weeks. There's one looking for a home.
One puppy is looking for
one
a home.
One puppy. Little Benji.
Little Benji.
Yeah.
How come Benji was left little last? Is Benji the wrong?
To be honest, I'm not really sure who's who, actually. I know a few of them. I don't know them all. There's a few that actually are little.
So if anybody is looking for
him Benji.
A Labrador Golden Retriever cross puppy that's very good at carrying sticks, just not where you want them, get in touch with Mags.
That has a fabulous... They will have beautiful temperaments. Both their parents are lovely, so they're... and I want them to go to good homes.
Good homes only. Yeah. Need apply.
Yeah, okay. Only good homes need apply.
Well, the photos are very, very cute anyway.
They are really cute. Oh, they're lovely. They're really, as puppies are, they're very playful in that. And they're all, I think they will be just nice, playful puppies in that. They're kind of look more like the Labrador than the Retriever, actually. So they're short-haired at the moment. Unlikely they'll get really long hair, actually, at this stage.
Easier to keep, the short hair.
Much easier to keep, yeah. Yeah,
the long hair tends to kind of gather about the place.
Yeah, they have a bit of that, all right.
Yeah. I wonder, would it be less obvious than the black hair that I have around my house during the winter? You know, the way they have that extra kind of thick coat. I'm just seeing drifts of black dog hair floating around the place all the time.
Yeah, it gathers in little
eddies where the wind would blow it.
Yeah.
And you open
like
a door.
In your dining room and stuff.
I can only imagine how much there is floating around when you've got all the puppies as well.
The puppies, only one puppy is in really. The others are out actually and they're in the shed. And they're funny, they climb up to the top of the hay and that's where they'll sleep up on the top.
Oh.
And they love hay, not straw as much. Hay, it's obviously there's some heat or something in it, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's softer.
So that's where they go and they're very happy.
And how are they getting on with the chickens and stuff?
One of them has taken to one of the small roosters actually and she just kind of chased it around and holds on to it.
Oh.
Yeah, it doesn't like that very much.
Yeah,
so training it away from that. But they kind of look at the geese. They haven't developed a fear of the geese. They're the only creatures in the place that haven't got a fear of the geese yet.
Yet,
but they will. That'll come.
I remember somebody saying to me one time at one of the bee courses, "I have dogs. Will the dogs go near the beehives?" And the answer to that was yes, once.
Just once. Yes.
Yeah, and then it may not happen again.
There's a Thomas Town has a great operation transformation project this year. There's every Tuesday and Thursday nights. There's walking in town. So 8 o'clock on Tuesday and Thursday, people meet in the key car park, and then there's two different routes and stuff. So you can do a kind of an hour walk or a shorter walk. But there's hordes of people out, and it's funny.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, and it's piles of kids in their high vis vests and that, and the kids are all like trying to be the first and beat everybody else. And
I believe a similar project is going on out in Castlecomer. Actually, I think I saw it
probably
on Twitter or something like that. So if anybody has the details of that, you might want to send it in to us, or if anybody else knows of a similar scheme in Kilkenny City, where people gather and go for a walk. This is all part of a new, improved person for the new year and so on.
Yeah. So, but it seems really successful, and it's funny, my children want to go to it, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, because their friends are going.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
So you see all the kids are kind of walking together, and then the parents or adults or whatever are walking and chatting and stuff. It's actually quite nice. Did it last night.
A great idea.
Yeah, it's really good.
And so. I've found with any kind of exercise, you're much more inclined to do it if you're doing it with somebody. So it's too easy to kind of, if you're doing something by yourself, it's just too easy to kind of write it off. But if you're getting out for a walk with somebody else, the night you're not in the mood, they'll drag you along, and the night they're not in the mood, you can drag them along.
Well, the 12-year-old dragged me along last night.
There
so,
you go. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And it was nice, yeah. So, yeah, that's a good thing to do. What else am I doing this week? I have another woofer coming back to the woofing season again.
Oh, so
I have
woofing time again.
Woofing time again, yeah. Woofer coming on the Sunday that I know they're French and I can't remember the rest of the details. I need to look it up. For a week.
Welcome, French person.
Yeah, no,
exactly. Here's a list of jobs. I will feed you at the following hours.
I will feed you and look after you, and you
very
will help
good.
Me. So, for a week. So,
and have you a list of jobs ready for the woofer?
I have a few things ready. Yeah,
great. I'm going to
see what the weather is like, actually. And but
I
might get a
anyway.
Few. What?
Get them out in the weather anyway.
Oh yeah, but there'll be plenty. If it's too hardy, there'll be some painting indoors and that. So
good stuff.
Yeah. So there you go.
I was inspired by you last year. I'm definitely getting into woofing this year. Going to get some for the late spring or summer. Whatever.
Well, there are loads looking for places. I get emails like every second day, people looking for places. So yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Right, I'm going to sign up for that. Did you see there's some news, news just in, as they say, that Zuni Restaurant and the hotel was shortlisted for Georgina Campbell's Breakfast Award this year?
I've had breakfast there a few times. It's very nice, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's on the shortlist now to win that, so the Georgina Campbell Irish Breakfast Award in association with Volta Ireland. And that's... fair play to them. The winners will be announced on the 19th of February.
Very good. They do a lovely brunch.
I can't believe all these years I've only ever gone in for coffee and dinner. I've never had their brunch or their breakfast in there, but a lovely place. Loves Zuni. Nominations for the Restaurant of the Year Award, are they closed now? I think they close the end of this week. So if you'd like to get on, nominate or vote for your favourite restaurant or food business, I think the nominations the voting is still
10th of February or something.
The Irish Times are details available on the Irish Times or the Restaurants Association of Ireland website. There was lots of food news out this week. I don't know whether it's because I don't know what, but I'm
we're all fed up with Brexit, maybe.
Or just the end of January when, you know, there's no point in talking about any delicious stuff because nobody's interested in it. But there was a report out during the week which caught my eye, because it had a really catchy headline. You know that kind of beer before wine or wine before beer type rhyme. So if beer before wine, you'll be just fine. Wine before beer will make you feel queer. That's the way I always...
Yeah.
So it's like if you have a glass of beer before you have a glass of wine with your dinner, that'll be fine. But if you do it the other way around, beer on top of wine, you'll be dying the next day.
Oh, and I'd be much more likely to do it that way around, actually.
Right, well...
There we go.
People used to say that would make you feel terrible. But now there have been not one, but two studies done, one in Germany and one in Cambridge University, no less, where they tested it. And so these guys got together, they got 90 volunteers between the ages of 19 and 40, and pretty much they just plied them with beer and wine repeatedly. Once starting with the beer and then going on to the wine, and then vice versa. It was lager and white wine. And they got them to drink 2.5 pints of lager followed by 4 large glasses of white wine. Now, that would get anybody drunk, really, I think.
That's a lot.
It is. And then the second group had it the same drinks, but in the reverse order. And the third group then only had beer or wine until they got to the same breath alcohol kind of concentration. And then they were asking them afterwards how they felt and how the hangover was the next day and all of that kind of stuff. Do you know what the result of the story was?
It's too much to drink.
Basically, if you feel drunk and you feel sick the night before as you're drinking, the next day you're going to be hungover. And it doesn't really matter which order you drink them in.
Okay.
Or what you drink. It's just if you feel wretched the night before, expect to feel wretched the next day.
But if you had one glass of wine and one beer.
Not a bother.
So it's nothing to do with.
So volume comes into it, the amount you drink, the rate at which you drink, what you've also had to eat that day.
Yeah.
So regardless of the kind of order that it's done in. Now,
okay.
That's just with wine and beer. There was a kind of an analogue to that, or an addendum to that report, which was talking about the additional things apart from alcohol that are in some drinks and how they can make you feel much worse and make your hangover much worse. So if you have nice organic white wine in moderation, you're not going to feel bad. But if you drink bourbon, for example, which has lots and lots of ingredients in it taken from the wood of the cask and so on, it will make you feel worse than the same volume of vodka, for example.
Oh.
Yeah, because the vodka's just kind of pure.
I think I've ever drank bourbon, actually.
There you go. There you go. I wouldn't be a fan myself.
I won't now, actually.
No. But it kind of makes sense. So it's taken in kind of bizarre stuff from the keg and, you know, all of that. And you're drinking in. Your body has to deal with that as well as the alcohol. It would kind of make sense. But anyway, it goes in very, gets filed very much in the folder of all in moderation.
All, yeah. I hope they didn't spend too much money on that study, really, in fairness.
So the truth is that drinking too much of any alcoholic drink is likely to result in a hangover, said Joran Cockling, the first author of the study. Well done.
Well
indeed.
Done.
Now, on to a positive gut health story. We talk about gut health in here quite a bit. We did a detailed program on it not so long ago, but apparently it's going to be the number one food trend for 2019. So we're going to hear lots more about nutrition and how we can look after our gut flora during 2019. Very trendy. As are edible insects. Have you ever tried any?
No, but my sister travels a bit in kind of that part of the world where they'd eat a lot of, so she often sends photos of things that she's looking at in markets and in shops and that. So I haven't ever tried them. I wouldn't be against trying them. No. But you're saying they're now for sale in Sainsbury's?
Sainsbury's. It's the first mainstream retailer in this part of the world to launch an edible insect product. And it's doing that in partnership with a company which I love. The company's name is Eat Grub.
Very apt.
Very clever, isn't it? And they've done some research in the UK and they reckon that 42% of shoppers are open to trying insects. I'd certainly be open to try it.
Yeah, I would
actually
try it.
I have had them before. But it's supposed to be a very sustainable way of providing protein and so on.
Do you know what type of insects they are?
These guys are crickets.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're doing a barbecued roasted cricket.
But I suppose they're farmed crickets, are
they? They are. They're all farmed crickets.
So I suppose it depends, like, are they organically farmed crickets or sustainably farmed crickets or whatever? You know, it's the same for everything, isn't it?
That is true, yeah.
Or where are they flown from the other side of the world? Or are they coming from Britain or not? I wonder.
Yeah.
So I suppose
it's always in the detail, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's in the detail. Just like that Eat Lancet report in the Bourne of, about which I read, the less time I have for it.
Yes.
But yeah, it's always in the detail of these things. So you're right. If the crickets are flown on an aeroplane all the way from China, probably not that great.
You could eat potato crisps instead, maybe.
But if there's a company in the UK producing them, that'd be fantastic then in terms of their impact on the
environment. It is interesting, though, I suppose, how our diets change as time goes on.
For 500 million euro, they reckon, by 2023, the insect for food market will be in the world. Isn't that incredible? That's half a billion on edible insects.
Sure, they can make its way to Ireland.
Opportunities for bee farmers in Ireland who are struggling at the moment. Yeah. Get into crickets. So they were just some of the food news or the food news reports that I saw during the week. One other one about price inflation in France, but we might take the ad break first.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about that. We'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here as usual with Mags Morrissey, and we're live today, Friday from 4 to 5, so please send in any comments or questions that you might have by text to 086 353 7782, or you can email the show kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And during the break we had a text in to tell us that there's a local history walk every Saturday at 11 a.m. in Kilkenny, and it's meet at the parade. So that'd be a nice thing
That's really nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, way to get a bit of exercise and to learn something new. And actually on that topic, Kilkenny Tourism organised a what's called a fam trip or a familiarisation trip during the week for accommodation owners, and myself and some guest house owners and B&B owners and other self-catering owners went on a tour of the Medieval Mile here in Kilkenny. We started in the Medieval Mile Museum and then we kind of doubled back on ourselves and went up to Butler House. And then from Butler House, we talked a little bit about the design yard and the castle. And then we took a walk up along High Street and got to the cathedral and finished in the Smithwick's experience. And I love Kilkenny. Been here for 18 years now. I've always loved it. But every time I go on one of these walks, I learn something new, something that makes me love the place even more. So if anybody is listening, you're living in Kilkenny, whether you've lived here all your life or you're just new, there are some fantastic sights to see in town, and the Smithwick's experience is well worth doing. A guided tour of the cathedral is absolutely well worth doing. Go see Butler House and the fabulous work they've done there over the last couple of years, and they've restored down the basement level of Butler House now, and it's open as a little bar. They do afternoon tea. They're doing lunch in there. They're doing brunch. Really stunning dining room overlooking the gardens. The Medieval Mile Museum is well worth a visit if you haven't been there. Just so much to see and do.
Yeah, there is. Indeed.
We're spoiled. We really are. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous city. Now, I mentioned just before the break, we need to talk about Valentine's Day, of course, and I'm disgusted that Declan came in and asked your opinion on picking a Valentine's prize and not mine.
I'm not sure why he did that.
That's sexism in the workplace. I may make an official complaint about something like that, why he doesn't think I might be rosemantic and help make a choice.
Yeah, but I don't know how rosemantic Valentine was, really, was he?
Well, it didn't end well for him.
No.
In fairness now, poor old St. Valentine.
No. A lot of things, like, I actually did a bit of research just with friends this morning. So I was asking them for any, like, Valentine stories or observations or anything. To say that I got absolutely nothing positive is, like, an understatement. There's people just suggesting I talk about the Valentine's Day massacre.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was looking up a piece of music to finish the show with, and I came across a David Bowie song about Valentine, and I said, oh great, it was about the massacre.
Yeah, there you go. It's not really the day that a lot of, like, some people maybe, I don't know, love it, but a lot of people loathe it.
Wow, okay.
But St. Valentine, he's not just the patron saint of romance. Oh, it's not quite romance either. He's the patron saint of beekeepers.
Isn't that brilliant?
Isn't that brilliant? And epilepsy.
Okay.
So he covers
not
like
a great mix.
Engaged couples and happy marriages. So all of that together. It's quite a big, I don't know. He's dead a long time though, to be honest. So I'm not sure how effective he is.
His heart is in Dublin, I think, isn't it?
There's part of it in Dublin, but he's scattered in Ireland, England, France, Scotland, the Czech Republic, and his skull is in Rome in the Basilica of Santa Maria. So
amazing.
I don't know how that happened, actually.
It was big business before the Reformation. Relic tourism was a huge business. So if you were if you had a nice relic in your church, a piece of the original cross, the hand of the penitent saint, you know, or the penitent thief, you'd get people to come visit, and while they were there, they'd get indulgences, and you could sell them time off in purgatory and all of that kind of stuff. It was a big money spinner for the monasteries.
Well, it's Whitefriars Street Church in Dublin is where some part of them is.
That's actually where my parents were married.
Oh,
yes,
lovely.
Indeed.
Oh, there's a bit of romance.
A bit of romance while St. Valentine's heart looked down on them.
Anyway, he has been associated with love since the Middle Ages. But beekeepers, I think that's interesting, isn't it?
I thought St. Gubnet was the patron saint of beekeepers.
You see, sometimes there's like a few saints have take on different roles.
Right, okay, so I wouldn't, okay, like, I gotcha.
So I was thinking, you know, so I got nothing positive from anybody. And I've loads of friends who were happily married and everything, and they never do anything for Valentine's Day. One friend said in the very early days, which would be 25 years ago, her boyfriend at the time used to buy flowers, but he used to buy them kind of like in advance. So by the time we got to Valentine's Day, they were starting to tire. So she told him not to be doing that anymore, not to buy them. So I think he just stopped.
And that, like, it's not that he bought them then at a more timely and more opposite time. He just stopped buying them.
He just stopped buying them.
Oh, right. Okay.
They're still very happily married, so I think it's okay. And then somebody else, there's kind of a new movement called Galentines.
Oh, I've seen this on signs in pubs and stuff about the place. So what's that all about?
You're the gal friends.
Get the gals together.
Yeah. So I'm going on a Galentines night next week, actually.
Oh, the girls all get together and go out and have a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Women supporting women sort of stuff, you know.
So if you're a single chap, actually, and you're looking to meet a few women, Galentine's, you might go
that
along and just hang around the edges of these Galentine's nights out.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Mm-hmm. There's a little
Instead
tip for listeners
money,
there.
Like
now.
On fancy dinners and silly flowers on Valentine's Day. That might be an idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but if you're going on a Galentine's night out or you're going predatory on a Galentine's, you don't have anybody to buy the flipping chocolates
you
for.
You spend your money on something else.
Well, St. Canice's Neighbourhood Hall invite everybody to a Valentine's afternoon tea dance, apparently, and on Wednesday the 13th of February from 2 to 4:30. And they've asked everybody to asked us to give that a mention. And that's part sponsored by St. Canice's Community Action. So there you go. You go to an afternoon tea dance on the 13th.
Well, that's lovely. And you know what? I actually think, you know, Valentine's Day, you don't get too bogged down in the romantic love element of it. There's probably, well, that's quite a transient love anyway, but there's lots of other loves in our lives that are probably better to spend time and effort on.
That's the spirit.
Isn't that the spirit? So you know what I'm going to do, apart from my Galentine's night out?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to make toast for the kids. Well, I only have two of them next week, actually. And then cut out a little heart in the middle and then fry an egg in the middle of the little heart shape.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
That'd be nice.
Now, that'll
be
very Instagram-friendly on Valentine's Day.
Mine probably won't be that.
So, have you got a cookie cutter in the shape of a heart?
Oh, I have loads of cookie, every size heart you need, actually.
Now, instead of the toast, would you not fry the bread? You could fry the bread and cut out the middle bit,
yes,
and then put the egg in.
Yeah,
while
but you want to fry it on
frying.
The other side. You'll toast it a little bit first, and then put it onto the pan, and then otherwise you won't have it toasted on the other side.
You see, I'd fry one side,
and
then turn it over, and
that's
then
what
do
you
the
can
egg.
Do for your.
Fine, I'll do that. I'll do that for the dogs.
Or you can make heart-shaped pancakes. Well, that'd be cute.
Oh no, that would be very cute. Yeah. That would. Yeah,
I think you should do something for whoever is in your life, like. Or you could have a boiled egg and heart-shaped toast. Ah, lovely. That'd be a nice way to start next week, whatever morning, every day, actually. Or a nice red or pink smoothie with, like, raspberries or strawberries or something. So, there you go.
So, celebrate it. It's a way to kind of think of what you love in your life, really, rather than who you love in your life.
And and the people that are important in your life, actually. Okay. I think give them an I'll mention.
Well, our friends here at Community Radio in Kilkenny City have a Valentine's weekend giveaway. And the prize is compliments of the Arlington Lodge Suites in John's Hill in Waterford City. And it's a weekend for two with rose petal turned down chocolates, Prosecco and a supper picnic basket on arrival. And a Prosecco reception in the courtyard on the Friday evening from 6:30 to 7:30. And all you need to do to enter is compose a poem, a funny story or limerick about a Valentine's experience and send your composition to us here at the station info@communityradiokilkennycity.ie and put Valentine's weekend in the subject line, or you can text 086 353 7782. Or you can visit the Facebook page, so the Community Radio Kilkenny City Facebook page, and the competition details will be on there as well. And the winner will be picked Friday evening. I think it's later on today. Okay. Also, you'd want to hurry. You'd want to get that entry in straight away.
So St. Valentine was beheaded on the 14th of February. That's what happened to him that day.
Okay.
That wasn't too romantic. Really.
Right. Okay. Not a happy day for St. Valentine.
For him, no.
He was martyred, wasn't he?
Yeah. Because he married the back in the day, they didn't want people getting married. They wanted the males going to war. But he was in defiance of this law, so he was marrying young couples in secret.
Oh.
And that's why he was beheaded for that.
Oh,
a serious offence in the eyes of the emperor.
But he
Claudius
was respecting their love.
So yeah,
He was respecting their love and helping them be together, and then he was killed for his troubles.
Yeah,
Claudius did it, did he?
Claudius, Emperor Claudius II of Rome.
Oh, the second. He was the worst of the Claudiuses.
But there's no, you know, there's loads. There's quite a lot of history around it and stuff. And I'm not sure this. There was another festival called the. Got to do with the god of Lupercus. Have you heard about that?
No.
So men would run around the Palatine Hill naked, striking any woman who came near them with the hides of animals that they'd sacrificed.
That sounds like Kilkenny now, when the nightclub's empty on a Saturday night.
Yeah, a little bit, I suppose. And they believed that hitting the women would ensure fertility. I don't know. Did anyone not question that at the time?
This is not something we sanction or encourage here at Community Radio.
No, it's not.
Okay.
So there was that tradition before Valentine was beheaded, so they think that there may be a link with the two. So there was fertility and then love, you know, that sort of crack. But
I should have covered that topic, Mags. Maybe.
I think I did really well.
I am going to make
this cake, though.
Now, Mags is holding up a book in front of me here with the most romantic-looking cake. It's actually, it's a perfect rendition of what I'd imagine St. Valentine's heart looks like at the moment. It's kind of wrinkly and dark brown. But it's a chocolate cake raspberries.
I've actually made it a couple of times for Valentine's over the years. So it's a really kind of light, chocolatey sponge with raspberries and cream in the inside. And then it's covered in a ganache icing.
A chocolate ganache.
Yes. Raspberries on top, and I have loads of raspberries in the freezer. So I actually am making this, maybe not in a heart shape, but for a birthday at the weekend, and I might make it then just for.
Well, it looks lovely.
It does look really, and it actually tastes really nice as well. So, I will make.
Now it's hard to get a light chocolate cake.
Well,
most of them are very stodgy.
No, this is, and that is the whole thing about this cake and stuff. It looks very lush and that, but it's actually really, because it's more of a kind of a chocolatey sponge than a Madeira type thing.
Right.
So it's very light, but you need to be very careful when you're making it that you keep it light. You know, you have to fold in the flour very carefully and very gently in that, so it stays very light.
Give us the ingredients and tell us how you're going to make it.
Okay. And I have the heart-shaped tin and everything, of course, for it. So
for somebody who's so down on Valentine's now, you've got the heart-shaped cutter, you've got the heart-shaped tin.
Oh, yeah, I have it all.
Okay.
Mm, yeah.
You're ready for it.
Ready for anything. So you need 150 mils of milk, 1 tablespoon of butter, tablespoon of vanilla extract, 3 eggs, 200 grams of caster sugar, 175 grams of plain flour, 3 tablespoons of the best cocoa, and a teaspoon of bicarbonate of soda, that's bread soda. We're going to pour the milk and the butter into the pan and heat them up. Then add the vanilla, whisk the eggs and the sugar until they're really thick, light and frothy, really frothy. So this is going to take a bit of time actually to do that. And you can do with your mixer if you can't, if you have it. And then you're going to combine the flour, the cocoa and the bread soda together. And then while you're beating the eggs and the sugar, pour in the hot butter and milk mixture and the vanilla, nice and slowly, just with the mixer turned down. And then what you need to do is to fold in, when you've all of that mixed up really nicely, fold in your flour really gently and carefully, like a really big kind of fold until it goes in. And then divide it between two tins, or cook it in one tin if you only have one heart-shaped tin, and into the oven for about 20 minutes in total, but just keep an eye on it because you really don't want to overcook it. And then take it out, cool it, cut it in half if you've just got one cake, and then you're going to fill the centre with whipped cream and raspberry mixture, and then you need to make your ganache icing, which is double cream, 150 ml of double cream, 150 grams of dark chocolate, 1 tablespoon of golden syrup, and you're just going to heat all of that and like in a bowl over a saucepan of
hot water. Hot water. A bain-marie. So yep. In a bowl over a pot of hot water. Yep.
Put your cake together, pour that over the top, kind of smooth it out, and you want it kind of drizzling down the sides. This isn't a perfectly immaculate looking cake or anything like that. You want it drizzling down the sides, and then you're going
to. And is that to signify the failings and the imperfections of love? Is that what that signifies?
Yeah, something like that. And then you're going to put your raspberries all around the edge of it in your heart shape.
Okay.
Isn't that fab?
That sounds lovely.
But it's delicious actually as well.
And you're going to send me the recipe for that.
Oh yes.
Because listeners can stream or podcast the show on thekitchengarden.ie every week. And up there on the description of each of the shows, we put any recipes that Mags brings in and she sends on to me, we put them up there. So you don't have to scribble down the recipe every week.
And keep this recipe, to be honest. You could make this cake. It doesn't have to be a heart shape. You make it for any kind of an occasion because it's actually, it's kind of a desserty type cake.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really tasty. Like,
I don't like heavy type cakes
or anything like that. So it's really nice. Mm. Yeah. And then when it's cut, it looks really nice because you've got the different layers and that.
Very good.
So yeah, no, it's fab. You know, some recipes you have for years, I've probably started making this 10 years ago. I've made it a dozen times over the years for various things, and it's a good one.
I love sponge cakes. I haven't had one in ages, a nice sponge. Yeah. Haven't had a nice sponge in ages. I might make one. Get my assistant onto that. Now, before we leave St. Valentine's, there is a Choc Tom is a charity here in Kilkenny that an awful lot of people would be familiar with, and it's involved in raising awareness and support for those victims of suicide and their families. And they're running a competition, or they're running a fundraiser this Valentine's Day. And for €50, you get a basket of locally produced Irish food products. And then businesses all over Ireland have been kindly donating vouchers and so on, which are going into some of those hampers. So for £50, you get a hamper of goodies, plus the chance to win, you know, an overnight stay in various hotels and bottles of booze and all sorts of stuff. And all proceeds of this go to benefit Choc Tom. So well worth doing. I've bought myself one of the hampers for £50. It looks to me like you're going to get £50 worth of ingredients regardless. So details can be found on the Choc Tom Facebook page, or if you're on Twitter, Gingerbread Miss at Gingerbread Miss is looking after organising that, I think, on Twitter. So I'll tweet a link to that as well if you wanted to have a look at my Twitter feed at Nesbitf, and there'll be details of that up there. Or if you just have a look at Choc, T-E-A-C Tom on Facebook, I'm sure you'll find the details there. So Valentine's, that's that move.
That's that done.
That's that.
Yeah.
And of course it was
And I think, you know what, do something nice on the day. If you have a dog, take the dog to the beach for a walk or something. Do something nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, should we mention Lunar New Year? It was, of course, the Chinese New Year during the week, and we're into the start of the Lunar New Year. The Year of the Pig.
The Year of the Pig, yeah.
So the Year of the Dog has passed and the Year of the Pig is upon us. Do you know how the years got their names?
Well, the pig, do you know how the pig got its name?
No.
There was a party and whoever turned up first got the slot.
Okay. I know a different story now.
I'm sure there's loads of stories.
Our friend Leah Leendertz in The Almanac, which is my go-to guide for all of these things for the show, she says that there was the Great Race, in which the Jade Emperor, who was the very first emperor who unified China, and he was a gentle and caring ruler of the gods in Chinese mythology.
Jade
Emperor.
Yes, yeah. That's
so he asked all of the animals to gather for a race to celebrate his birthday. And the first 12 animals would be given a special place as his guards at the heavenly gates forevermore. So they were all... the details of the race, I think, are hilarious. So he said, the first 12 of you here will be honoured forever. So the race was across a great wide river. And the first one to react was the quick-witted rat, who noticed the ox was getting ready, steady, dependable kind of creature. He was getting ready to get into the water. So the rat just leapt upon his head and got a lift across the river. Oh. And just before the ox got to the other side, he jumped off the ox's head, landed on the other bank. Boom, you're in first. Well done, you win. Very ratty kind of thing to do, really, isn't it? Mm. And then the ox made it. The tiger, just swam confidently across the river. The dragon was coming along, but he noticed that the poor old rabbit who was floating on a log was struggling a bit, so he used his breath to kind of blow the rabbit's log along, so he kind of helped out the rabbit. Then there was a story about the snake and another one, the lively horse, the shy goat, the clever monkey, the courageous rooster, the loyal dog, and how they all got across the river. And now it says that all of the years are given the name of each of those animals and the attributes that the animal showed in participating in the race. The people who were born under that in that lunar year take on those attributes. Okay. Isn't that funny, isn't it?
Yeah, but the pig was last.
The earth pig. And children born 12. This year will be communicative and popular, apparently. The earth pig signals a lively, joyous and festive year, but grounded because it's an earth element as well, so they're not too frivolous.
Okay, well, I have one niece or nephew coming this year, so
there you go.
It'll be all of those
things. Yeah, if you believe in it. Now, we better take an ad break. We're coming up after this, we're going to be talking about some nature, there's some questions in, and then we'll be looking at some jobs to do in the garden. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey, and we're live every Friday from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. And while we're on air, we'd love to hear from you, so drop us a text to 086 353 7782, or you can email at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Couple of text messages in about your attitude and tone on St. Valentine's Day, Mags. A lot of people kind of bah humbug, but for the Valentine's spirit.
I'm making a bloody cake.
I know.
With chocolate and raspberries.
Now, there is another text message in from Paula. Paula, thanks for getting in touch. And it's a question for you. And Paula wants to know, is it a crime to remove hedgerows on farmland? She's been watching, sadly, as mature trees, hedges and a little pond all fall victim to circular saws and bulldozers.
Well, it's not against the law, sadly, but the hedge cutting ban starts on the 1st of March, so farmers, local authorities can cut whatever hedges they want this time of the year. They can also, there's no law against removing them either. Mm. You can't touch them in the season between from the 1st of March. But yeah, it's awful to see it happening. It's a shame.
It really is.
It's very hard to watch it, actually.
And if you're a part of any of the GLOS schemes or anything like that, of course, you're not allowed to do it. And farmers are encouraged in those schemes to actually plant hedgerows.
Yeah.
And it seems to me a terrible tragedy that we're taking out mature hedgerows still, even though I know it was common in the 70s to do it, but still we're taking them out, because the biodiversity in an established hedgerow will take 100 years to replicate in a brand new hedge.
Yeah.
So you'll have the mycelium of all kinds of mushrooms growing in that hedge, that just planting a few plants in a row, it's not replicating that. So you might have tens of thousands of organisms living in and around an established hedgerow.
Some of our hedgerows would be hundreds of years old. They reckon that the hedgerows of a townland boundary were planted first, and then the internal hedges would have been planted after that. They would have had stone walls, as a base or some part of a base. You'll take a long time to develop a good strong hedgerow, even yourself, do a planting one now, but still do it. Plant them.
Sad to see, Paula, but not against the law at this time of the year. Now, one other thing I just wanted to mention before I know you're mad keen to talk about bees, but the National Biodiversity Data Centre, friends of the show, have just released their spring-summer workshop programme. And ironically, one of the things they're talking about in there is biodiversity, and they have a whole load of trips and workshops to help people identify the plants and animals around them. So there's trips, for example, example, to the seashore, and there's trips to identify wildlife in the hedgerow, and there's also bees and butterflies and so on. Now, there's a long list of workshops, and the prices vary from 20 to 50 quid. There are special concession rates as well. I won't have enough time to go through all of the events here, but I'd encourage you to check out biodiversityireland.ie/events for the full list of their workshops. They have a nice PDF flyer there that you can download that lists them all and tells you where they're on. So you can email info@biodiversityireland.ie if you want any more information, or just check out the website biodiversityireland.ie. We might give that a mention again next week, because there's a few in there that I'd really like to.
Yeah, there's some really good ones.
I've been running them
for a couple of years and stuff.
Yeah, interesting. And actually, maybe we could go along and make a little feature for the show in one of those. Now, you wanted to talk to me about bees.
Bees, yes. Mm. Well, I know you're a beekeeper. Mm-hmm. So the Mid Kilkenny beekeepers have their meeting every month. You weren't there on Wednesday, but I actually decided last year to help out organising guests, and it took me quite a while to find a guest. But lo and behold, I had a bread class a couple of months ago, and there was a lady at it, and conversation turned to bees, as it sometimes does. And her husband, who's a molecular biologist, but is doing research on bees with a couple of others. So he came along, his name is Kieran Gagan, from Dungarvan in County Waterford, and he came along with one of his colleagues, and they made a presentation on what they're doing. So what they're doing is they're trying to ensure the viability of bees in the wild, and it's all based around the Varroa mite, which I know you don't know a lot about, but which is a tiny little mite, a little parasite on bees that came into Ireland in around 1989, and it's caused, well, devastation to a lot of bee population. Would have come from, I think, Middle East.
Middle East, that's right.
And it's spread around the world kind of since the 60s. And it's actually only recently, I think, gotten into Australia. So
it's quite a large mite as well.
Well, kind of a millimetre, 1.5 millimetres or something.
But when you consider the size of a bee, the analogy I use when I'm talking to people about this would be, it would be like you having a Jack Russell size creature attached to you.
Yeah.
Which is predating on you. So it's bitten into you and it's feeding from you.
It sucks. It sucks their blood. And but then it leaves open wounds and that, so they're prone to disease and infection and that. So it basically kills the bees. Mm. But he, so he's a molecular biologist, and then he's got a colleague who's an avid beekeeper. But they're kind of doing it voluntarily. They've gotten some money from the Department of Ag, but a lot of it is really so they've about 15 people who helped them on the project. So what they wanted to do was they wanted to establish bees that were tolerant to the Varroa mite. And they wanted to overcome the major source of mortality. And then they wanted to return bees to the wild that have this tolerance. So what they
because
did was...
The problem there, sorry for interrupting you, but the problem there is that we've had colonies, the wild colonies of bees are untreated for Varroa.
Yeah.
And most of them have died off. The colony has collapsed because of the predation of the Varroa. So the Varroa doesn't just feed off the adult bees, it also kind of feeds off the larvae. And even if they survive, they tend to be born with malformed wings and so on.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the bacteria infection in the hive as well can kill off the entire hive. So the beekeeper over the years has been putting in various treatments to kill the Varroa in our hives to keep our bees alive. But in the wild, that hasn't been happening. And
no,
numbers
of course
have
not
collapsed.
Yeah, yeah.
So these guys now are trying to breed bees that are better able to cope.
Yeah. So, and how they're better able to cope is if they have good hygienic behaviour. So he was showing lots of slides and that. So if you could see the little bee larvae in the comb, and you could see the little mite on it. And then if the mite goes in when it's an egg, and it's then the cell is capped, and then it'll breed while, and it has the same kind of life cycle as it takes the larvae to develop. So then the idea of it is that one little mite will reproduce in that cell, and then when the bee is emerging, it'll go out with like its offspring and into the rest of the hive.
Mm.
So that bee will be affected, and then it'll spread onto the other bees in the hive. But some bees who have really good hygienic behaviour know that there's something wrong with this larvae. There's something in there that is wrong with the larvae. And there was a little video of this bees pulling the larvae out, the affected larvae, and disposing of it. So they take it out. Now, on this little video, you could see one of the mites getting onto the bee that was actually removing the larvae. But even still, it was still breaking the life cycle and removing that one. So some of them were disposed of.
Okay.
So they want bees that have that behaviour,
okay,
that hygienic behaviour. It's fascinating, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
So they went and gathered... So how do they find these bees? So they went to 5 counties, they went to 93 colonies of bees, and they did this test using liquid nitrogen. So they got a frame of bees, or a frame of comb, I suppose, with eggs in it. And then they used a circular thing of liquid nitrogen on the comb, which would kill the eggs and the larvae. And then they wanted to see if the bees, so they gave it, I think, 12 or 24 hours and see what the bees' response was to that, so okay, in that colony. So then if the bees came back in, removed all of the larvae from that little circle, they were hygienic bees. They had that behaviour. So then they took samples of them. So they have this site set up down near Dungarvan, and they have about 70 hives, and they have a little office and little working rooms and that, because it's huge work if you think about even just looking after that number of hives. So they've brought back all of the hygienic bees, the bees with that behaviour, and they're breeding from them. But they're kind of monitoring to see how they're getting on and what they're doing and if they keep up the... at that kind of hygienic level and that. So the project is about 3 years old now. And yeah, it was just fascinating. It's fascinating to see the mite. Parasitology is very interesting anyway, to see the mite and what it's done. And also, you know, all they want to do is to be able to release these bees back into the wild, so that they're able to deal with the mite, the varroa mite.
At this stage, it's here to stay. We're not going to be able to eradicate varroa. And it's been living for as long as the bees in Israel and the Holy Land where it comes from. So the bees there are able to cope with it. What we're basically trying to do now is come up with some way that our bees in the wild can...
And a way of not using, you know, chemicals were used to treat the mite in the past.
They're pretty nasty.
So a way of not, like, they really don't, they don't want that... those sort of chemicals used, and but if anybody knows of any wild bees that are that they could actually access and just have a look at them and take a sample and stuff, they'd really be interested to see.
They'd want to know how long that colony of bees has been living there and how they're coping
and to see
with
if
the varroa.
They have varroa or what they're doing with them.
So how can we get in touch with them?
Well, you'll have to come through me. I'm not really going to give out the guy's number and stuff, but if you come through me and stuff, and I'll pass it on.
So if you know of any wild bee colonies around the county, maybe you'd drop us an email, kitchengarden@crkc.ie, or get in touch with Mags at Mags Morrissey on Twitter. Now, we're almost out of time because I want to play a little bit of music before we go, given that it's Valentine's Day and so on. But there are some jobs that we can be doing during February. I have a big, long list for the month that we'll go through over the next coming weeks. But it's the time of the year where we start to prepare. So if you have a bed that you'd like to get some early crops into in the veg garden, now's the time to give it a bit of clear and maybe cover it in some fleece so that the soil can warm up. In the flower garden, also time to kind of be considering your cut flowers, Mags. I know you want to grow some cut flowers, so have a think about what you're going to be growing there. The last opportunities now to be pruning your apple and pear trees while they're still dormant. I'm seeing buds on various trees about the place now, so if you want to do your pruning, now is the time to do it. And speaking of pruning, your autumn autumn fruiting raspberries, you gave those a prune during the week as well.
Yeah,
they're
all done. Yep.
So now it's time to be doing those blackcurrant bushes, gooseberries, red currants, any of those, give them their prune, and that will be the final. Really getting towards the end of the opportunity for doing that. Amazing smell from the blackcurrant bushes when I did them a couple of weeks ago. Stunning, stunning smell from the buds that had started to form on them, because of course the blackcurrants buds were used in the perfume industry for a very long time as a carrier of other scents. Now, unfortunately, we're out of time in the kitchen garden for another week, and we really hope that you enjoyed the show. Thanks very much to everybody who got in touch with us, and remember, you can keep in touch with myself and Mags on Twitter during the week. I'm at Nesbitt F and Mags is at Mags Morrissey, or you can email kitchengarden@crkc.ie at any stage, and of course you can listen back to this show on thekitchengarden.ie. We'll be back on community radio at the same time next week. Maurice O'Connor is up after the sports news at 5. But bear in mind, on Valentine's Day, often tensions are heightened and people want a perfect day from their partner or the perfect present. And sometimes things don't always go according to plan. So I kind of thought that this song would be appropriate. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Me up in penitence, as you now tell me that you must. Be sure you're happy with the sentence. Be sure it's true, be sure it's just. La, 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 la. If you remember anything from this, remember this, remember. It's not so much of what you say, but how. Chapel, build a monolith, another victory you can claim.